Everything is different now. Maine's colleges and universities respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. For years, colleges and universities across the country have debated how and whether to use online technology for education. Then the pandemic arrived, and thousands of institutions of higher learning made the change almost overnight, sending students home, upgrading technology, giving professors crash courses and online platforms. The change has been disorienting for many faculty and students, especially low-income and rural students without access to broadband. It has also cost colleges and universities a lot of money. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with college and university leaders, including the chancellor of the UMaine system, about what they're doing to respond to the crisis and when they expect to get back to normal. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Everyone has had to make major adjustments because of the coronavirus pandemic. Maine's colleges and universities are no exception. Today, we'll hear from some of Maine's institutions of higher learning about what they've done to confront COVID-19 and what they're planning for the weeks and months ahead. Joining me are Danelle Malloy. He is chancellor of the University of Maine system, and Lori LaChance, president of Thomas College. And as always, we want to hear from you. Are you or someone you know a college student, a professor, a staff member who has been affected by the stay-at-home orders? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I thank you all both for joining us here, and we're going to hear from a lot of college administrators. And I'm going to start with the news of the day. Maine has just found out that its colleges and universities will receive $41 million in federal aid under the CARES Act. Chancellor Malloy, how much of that money comes to the University of Maine system, and how will it be used?
A little under $18 million will be coming to our system. One half of that actually has to go to student support. So basically, we are designing an approach at each one of our universities on how to help students who have really had financial loss as a result of the COVID episode. So, and the other half obviously goes to defray some of the additional costs that we have encumbered. As you might know, we asked our students to leave housing and leave their food plans. We reimbursed them as of the day that we did that. So we had about $20 million in lost revenue. Now that's, you know, we're a pretty big budget organization on our four or seven universities, but $20 million is $20 million, and it certainly impacts the university's operating dollars and potentially reserve. So we're happy to get the support from the federal government to defray some of those additional costs that we've had.
And you said some of the additional costs, not nearly enough, it sounds like.
Well, no, it does not cover our, if you will, out-of-pocket revenue loss or even some of the expenses that we've taken up. And I'm very happy that our system played a major role in making sure that Wi-Fi became available at locations across the state, at local libraries and parking facilities, where students could actually just drive, sit in their car, and do their work on their computer. We played a leading role in bringing about hundreds of sites where that is, in fact, happening as we speak. We're also very proud of the efforts that we've undertaken to help Maine itself in this crisis. Four of our campuses are being used as shelters of different types, a homeless shelter in one case, a respite shelter for people who are working in hospitals or frontline responding employees like fire personnel. Personnel and police personnel who don't necessarily or can't go home as a result of possible exposure. So we're doing that. We're providing ambulances and food service and thousands of pieces of PPE to make sure that people are have the garb that they need when they're serving people in the hospitals. And of course, we've also organized blood drives. So we're doing lots of things. That's not that doesn't come without cost. But our biggest upfront loss was returning the dollars that students had otherwise committed to with respect to housing and food.
Lori, what about at Thomas College? How much of the CARES Act funding comes to Thomas College?
Well, like the university system, we face the same kind of challenges in this transition. And we were very fortunate. We're receiving, as a small institution, about $800,000, a little less, through the CARES Act. But we also qualified, because we're relatively small and we're a private nonprofit, to receive funding through the Paycheck Protection Program. And that brought us $2.2 million to help us through this critically important transition period.
So that in that way, you'll pay your staff for the next couple months?
Yes, that will allow us to very comfortably keep our staff employed fully through this transition period. And the CARES Act money, like with the university system, will be put to helping individual students with the costs that they incurred and to help defray some of the lost revenue that we had when we returned our room and board monies as well.
Well, let me ask you, and Lori, I'll start with you and then go to Chancellor Malloy. I know that both of your schools have a lot of students who would be considered lower income and for whom, you know, they may have parents who have lost jobs during this. What are you seeing in terms, what are you hearing from your students? Are there students who are worried they're not going to be able to continue their college education during this pandemic?
Yes, it's interesting that you ask that, because Thomas is an institution that serves an extremely high amount of students that are Pell eligible. So many lower income students from humble roots. And I think we have among the highest Pell eligibility, certainly in the private colleges, but across the state, with about half of our students qualifying. So that's been a great concern, what this will mean for them. That's part of the reason that we closed our doors, or our state closed our doors. We transitioned to remote access, remote learning, remote teaching, remote work, starting on Sunday the 15th when we announced it. And we were scheduled to come back on Monday the 30th. And we felt it was incredibly important to process all of those refunds before they came back to class. So the Friday before they were due to come back, we ran a process and refunded all of the money, because we knew those families would need those resources in this period. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. We're going to get them through. We had over 98% of our students come back online and participate in their classes and their clubs and their activities from a remote format. But next fall, we'll have a much better understanding of how this economic downturn will impact their ability to consider coming back to college.
Chancellor Malloy, I want to ask you also about students who are lower income. And I know the University of Maine system has a huge number of students who have part-time jobs, and these jobs are connected with their financial aid. What does this all mean for them? Sure, they might be able to go home and take their classes online, but if they depended on their college campus job to help pay for their education, what are they doing now?
Well, about 93% of our students receive some form of support to attend college. And we have a very high percentage of students who are Pell eligible, which is a federal grant-making system that's based on family income and what a family can support. You ask a very specific question. That's about our student employees. We have about 5,000 student employees. About half of them are covered by the federal work study, and they are being paid through the semester as if they were working. We had a very tough decision to make. Would we continue to pay the other employees, the non-federally guaranteed employees? And we decided that ultimately that's what we should do. Students were relying on these dollars to be earned to pay for their tuition or their room and board or their books or other services that they needed. And so we're very happy that all 5,000 of our student employees spread throughout our 7 universities are in fact being paid through the semester. It's a big help, I think, to the families, certainly the students, and it was the right thing to do. Likewise, we're very happy that we've been able to keep the very large, vast majority of our employees employed. We have lots of people learning how to do things from a distance, and quite frankly, they're responding incredibly well. Like other universities, we have about 99% of our students that we've retained through this really a traumatic experience of going to an online educative process in about 10 days. And just to put it in perspective, that's about 212,000 course hours that had to be transferred that way. So it really was a massive undertaking. You know, we're a system of about 26,500 total students. To retain 99% of them through a transference like that, I think, is incredible. But it actually speaks to the commitment of the students and of the faculty who had to be joined in that effort. And I really celebrate the great students we have and the wonderful faculty and staff. And one other thing I would say is that people are being responsive. You know, I just checked with the University of Maine's numbers with respect to deposits, and they're coming in on par with the last four-year average. We thought we'd see a decline, and we're not seeing that decline. And obviously, like every other university, we will be prepared to be open for our late August, early September arrivals, and we'll work with the state on following whatever directives they give us.
Let me delve into that a little deeper. So, Chancellor Malloy, you are today committing that you intend to open the doors for what we might call normal classes in August.
Yes, we are planning that. We will be ready to do that. That, quite frankly, would be our preference. Now, I will recognize that we don't have total control of that, and some of that will vest in the governors, and she's doing an unbelievably great job. I think to look at the numbers of cases that we have in this state, 734, as we have this conversation, that number was kept down because of the governor's great leadership. Getting schools to cancel or to announce that they were going to go online after spring break meant that lots of people didn't come back and bring a virus back into the state of Maine and then see other portions of the population affected. So, we're going to be ready. We are ready to open in a traditional style if that's not possible. And I think it will be possible, but if it's not, we'll be up and running just as we are now. We are going to meet our students where they are. We hope to have them on our campuses, those who live with us, and that's about 5,800 students. But we also hope to have them in the classroom. That's all. That's the vast majority of our students are learning that way, and we want to be able to provide that service. If not, and under the direction of government, we'll cooperate.
On the line with us now is Margaret McFadden. She's Colby College's provost and dean of faculty. Margaret, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Pleasure.
How has Colby and its faculty adapted to remote learning in place of in-person interactions? For example, how do professors adapt a biology lab or a choreography class to remote learning?
Well, it requires incredible creativity, and I think our faculty did a wonderful job. But, of course, they needed a certain amount of support. And what we tried to do was have our Center for Teaching and Learning and our Academic Information Technology Group team up to provide all the resources the faculty would need to make those kinds of transitions, because that's not the kind of teaching we ordinarily do. We rely on face-to-face interactions as an important part of our model. And so they created this wonderful website that distilled down what do you need to know, took out all the extraneous information, what do you need to do this. They ran workshops that were very well attended by our faculty. They consulted one-on-one with particular faculty who wanted to try out different things or solve different problems. And what they came up with was so creative, I think, and energetic. So, for example, our dance faculty are using film to have students film themselves doing dance or doing choreography and then sharing those videos with each other. They watch them together. They critique them together. And so much of the work of a dance class is happening in the ordinary way. Our science faculty did some really interesting things. So, for example, we had a biochem class in which, understanding that the college was going to close, the faculty ran to the supermarket and bought a number of dry goods that the students could use for fermentation experiments. And so they sent them home with packages of sugar and yeast and things so that they could be at home doing experiments safely but continuing the work of the class. Another science professor teaching an animal behavior class has assigned each of her students a wildlife webcam that they have to watch and monitor the animal behavior and report to the rest of the class. So there are lots of creative solutions that faculty came up with.
Margaret, I want to ask you this. I also want to ask our other guests, Chancellor Dan Malloy and Laurie LeChance from Thomas College, the same question before we go to a break. But I'll start with you, Margaret. What would you say to students all over the state and all over America who are really, I don't know if struggling is too strong a word, but, you know, having a tough time with this transition to online learning and keeping their spirits up and remaining and working hard at the same time in the face of this historic, unprecedented situation in our country?
Well, it's a great question. I guess I would say is really lean into what you're doing. You know, what we're finding is that our students are so eager for the contact with faculty and with their classmates that they are really finding that incredibly meaningful and powerful. They're preparing really well. But I think you point to something important, which is that many of them have challenges at home. Many of them are finding it a little bit difficult to concentrate without the usual structures of their lives. But I think they've done an incredibly good job, at least what I'm hearing from our faculty, of engaging with the class, engaging with each other, staying engaged with the college. And I think that's really important, is to stay connected with your friends, your teachers, your deans, all of those people, because we're all here to support you. That's what I would say to them.
Laurie LeChance, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I would share and echo Margaret's words. We've been trying to keep our students connected in a wide array of ways and just telling them to take advantage of all that's being offered. It may feel different, it may seem very different, but throwing yourself back into your clubs, the virtual meetings, the counseling that's happening online, the mentoring, the tutoring, the conversations with professors and coaches, the bingo nights, the trivia nights, the online esports, all those activities help to add a degree of normalcy that they can take full advantage of through this unprecedented period. And that alone, just knowing you're not alone, is one of the single greatest gifts we can give them.
And Chancellor Malloy.
Well, one of the things we're hearing from the students is that they're grateful to have something to do while they're home, quite frankly. Imagine if you were uprooted from your normal way of conducting yourself with your friends and new friends and old friends, and suddenly you had to go home and stop doing anything. And by the way, you can't work and you can't go to the park and you can't do other things. So students have really thrown themselves into this exercise, and we're very proud of them for that. We've also done surveys. Each of our universities has now surveyed the students that they're serving. And basically, we're hearing about 85% of students are satisfied with the transition. And quite frankly, the number of students who've taken the time to salute their faculty member, or their professor, is really quite incredible. They understand that in some cases our teaching staff is struggling, and the willingness to help somebody work their Zoom so that the class is conducted well, or walking fellow students through some of the technology online has been really quite good. And likewise, we are trying to keep organizations going and students meeting and having conversations. It really has been a remarkable experience, and I think in some ways will change education for a long time to come. Our ability to respond to the broader community is another thing. It's not just about students, it's about faculty. You know, we're making about 800 gallons a week at the University of Maine here in Orono of sanitizing product for hospital use. I mean, this is very high grade. The faculty came forward and said, hey, they're having a problem. We know how to solve this. We have other faculty members that are on the phone and giving advice to legislative leaders, to responders and first responders. This is an all-in for Maine approach that private and public universities, I think, are responding to, and our students are.
Before we go to a break, we want to say thank you to Margaret McFadden for joining us. Margaret is Colby College's Provost and Dean of Faculty. We are going to go to a quick break. When we come back, some of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Out and Managed Services, helping Maine businesses manage IT systems and business communication. Learn more at otelco.com. And Pharma, America's biopharmaceutical companies committed to beating the coronavirus. Updates from these companies are available at pharma.org/coronavirus.
COVID-19 has changed daily life in the United States, and with news breaking by the hour, it can be hard to stay up to date. I'm Michelle Martin. Join us every weekday for a new live conversation about the disease, what you need to know, what's coming next, and we will answer your questions. The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us tonight at 9 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Trusted news, quality entertainment, and lifelong learning is what Maine Public Television is all about, four channels strong. And now there's more daytime educational fare, from science to nature to history programming for the older kids who find themselves home this spring. We have the PBS Kids channel for preschool kids, but our main channel now has more afternoon programming for older learners, starting at 1 each afternoon. And the Maine Public World channel is offering the same each weekday afternoon from 12 to 5. Television programming that is worthwhile and educational to watch. See the schedule for our Maine HD and World channels at mainepublic.org. Click on the television drop-down.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how Maine's colleges and universities are responding to the pandemic. My guests are Lori LeChance, president of Thomas College, and Danelle Malloy, chancellor of the University of Maine system. We invite you to be part of the conversation by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Matthew Orlando, who is Bowdoin College's Senior Vice President for Finance and Administration. Matt, thanks for joining us. And I'm wondering, and I probably ought to have asked the others as well, do you have any students who are still on campus, or has everyone gone home?
Actually, we do. We normally have at Bowdoin around 1,700 students living on campus and 100, 125 living off. But right now we are down to 47 students still here, and they're primarily from places all over the world who could not go home due to travel restrictions or safety concerns in their home country. So they are still here on campus. We're housing and feeding them. So the one dining hall that we still have in operation is preparing grab-and-go meals for these students to pick up and take back to their dorms. And they're all they've been relocated from the dorms they had been living in into a single apartment complex that's got plenty of space for them to spread out and practice social distancing and to isolate if they need to do so.
I'm just wondering, generally, how is it going at Bowdoin? How is the transition to online classes? How are faculty and students holding up?
Yeah, you know, it's new for us. It's new for everyone. But by all accounts, going very well. I'm not as close to that as other things, sort of operationally on campus. But you know, we hit some rough patches initially. But I feel like folks are generally have hit their stride, and the classes are going on fairly well.
All right. And what about staff? Are you able to hold on to your staff, or are you having to furlough or lay off workers?
We are not. We continue to carry all of our faculty and benefit eligible staff on the payroll. And President Rose has really made it clear that job preservation is going to be our number one priority. We have implemented a hiring freeze, and there are certainly other budgetary levers that we're going to look at. We really don't know. It's too early to say sort of the depth and duration of this crisis and what the ultimate impact is going to be. But we are doing our own scenario planning, and there's lots of sacrifices we will make before we make any decision to lay off employees. That's just not a place we want to go.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks so much for calling in. That's Matthew Orlando, Senior Vice President for Finance and Administration and Treasurer at Bowdoin College. Lori and Dan, I'm going to go to two emails that are related. These are both from parents of students in high school. An email from Bethany. How, if any, will the admissions process change for students who are currently juniors in high school? These are students who would be looking to enroll in the fall of 2021. I know SATs have been canceled and are now not required by Maine colleges, but wondering how this might affect our students applying for admission to Maine colleges and universities. And then from Tina, Tina writes, I have a high school senior who needs to decide what school he is attending next fall before May 1st. It's really hard since he hasn't been able to visit several of the schools because of the admitted student days were all canceled. We're also concerned what will happen if he commits to a school, but then they don't open for on-site instruction in the fall and continue to do online distance learning. So I'm asking each school what the rules are for enrollment deferment if that happens. I'm not sure I'm the only parent thinking that they may not send their student to the university next fall if online learning continues. That could be a huge impact on university revenues. Lori LaChance, what would you say to a parent of a high school junior or a high school senior right now?
Well, for the juniors, certainly they should commence with their looking, though much of what they'll learn about the college will be done through the videos that we are creating with virtual tours, with a look into the day in the life of a student at Thomas, with the residence halls, with the type of activities, the majors, all the things that come with being part of a college will just have to be examined from another perspective. And following the social media and the feedback of our students, what they're experiencing, will at least start to give younger high school students a chance to have a look into what the spirit of the college is, to give them some ideas. But for seniors, the decision is much more pressing and much more important at this point. If they haven't had a chance to see the campus, certainly going through with admitted student days virtually will at least be a look into that. I know all of our counselors are reaching out personally to these students who have applied, as well as our coaches, faculty members, our Student Success Center, all the different clubs are trying to do very, very personal outreach to answer all those questions as best we can. As to whether or not we'll open in the fall, that will be something that's a bit beyond our control. Like the university, we're looking at different scenarios. What happens if they can come back? That's our hope and prayer. What happens if it's a delayed return to campus? And what happens if it's an extended time away from campus? Getting yourself on track with your college studies will be a good choice and a good investment, regardless of whether you can start day one on campus or whether you have to come on campus a little later. But I hope people will consider, for the future of their students, their young people, to try to get engaged with their college studies. When the economy is down, that's the best time to be utilizing your time to further your skills and your knowledge to position yourself for when the economy does turn around.
Chancellor Malloy.
So actually, I'm going to take a slightly different tact. I'm going to give the person who sent that message my phone number at my office. So it's a 207 area code. It's 973-3205, and I'm happy to give as specific an answer as possible to that person and perhaps help them make an appropriate decision, particularly if any of our universities are on their list. But even if they're not, I'd be happy to do it. Now, let me give a general answer. Things are changing in the world. Online learning is going to be very important going forward. In point of fact, most people, after the time they get a baccalaureate or a four-year degree, are going to do the rest of their lifelong learning online. Think about it. If you're an accountant, you get your CPA credits to maintain your status online. If you're a lawyer, you're taking online courses. If you're a doctor, you're taking online courses. If you're a nurse, you're taking online courses to stay current. So what I would say to a parent is don't discourage your student from starting, even if it has to be that way. If for instance, and I think we're going to be able to be open, but if we weren't able to be open in late August and September, we'll have a special effort to when we do bring people to the campus to go through kind of the traditional steps when we are allowed to open. And again, I want to be very clear, I believe we're going to be open. And the other thing I would say is, you know, an education's a tough thing to delay. It ends up costing you a lot more money. It would be better to start under whatever circumstances you can, work as hard as you can, get as many credits as you can, and do it in the most affordable way. One of the things that we know lots of students in Maine are struggling with or have struggled with is the amount of debt you have to undertake. We're very proud in the system that we basically didn't raise tuition dollars for a six-year period of time, that we've actually reversed the trend with respect to debt being accumulated by students attending our universities. So it's actually going down, not up. I would just say to a parent, think long and hard before you discourage your student, who is an active learner right now, from delaying that decision. But I'm happy to talk to that person. Feel free to call my office, Dan Malloy, 207-973-3205.
We'll go to Charles from York County Community College, a teacher there. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, I teach culinary arts at the college. I'm also the president of the Faculty Association, representing the faculty at all seven of our community college campuses. And at our schools, things are going pretty well. It started out early when President Daigler had declared that they were going to maintain all staff and faculty's salaries and wages, which was greatly appreciated and made a lot of anxiety disappear. And then from there, everyone just started pulling together, getting everything online. In my area, it was difficult. But we managed to put together food packets for the students to take home, cook their assignments, post pictures, their experiences, you know, and take it from there. For the fall, though, when they come back, we are probably going to do make sure that, you know, any of the hands-on skills they have and they can do some makeup classes, you know, to make sure they're ready for the industry.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for calling in. Charles teaches at York County Community College. We're going to go now to Becca Kredeski. She is president of the University of New England's Class of 2020, a health, wellness, and occupational studies major. Becca, congratulations, and thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
I understand, although you're a student at the University of New England, you returned home and are now living in northern New Jersey. How is remote learning going for you and for your friends?
Yep, that's right. I'm back in New Jersey right now. It's definitely been a little bit of a transition. Definitely interesting with it being my last semester of my senior year. But I think uni has done a very great job about being upfront and honest about this whole situation with how we were about to transition and moving everything online. All throughout spring break, I received countless emails from ranging from all my professors to the deans to President Harbor of our college about how the process was going to be. And one thing that I really appreciated was with my major, they reached out to every student just to check in to see how we were doing with the situation, see if we were able to join live to all of our virtual classes. All of mine have been over Zoom, so using one application has been really accessible and really easy to streamline the process. But also just to make sure that we, and they realize that we have extra responsibilities with being at home and possibly not having technology available to each of us. So I think with UNE just being upfront with us throughout all that, it's made this transition process really, really simple for myself and my peers and all my classmates. So it's been a great process so far, but definitely not how all of us have imagined hearing what this was like the last semester.
Sure, not imagining your final semester of your undergraduate experience. Rebecca, what do you plan to do after you graduate?
After graduation, I'm actually heading back up to Maine. I'm going to be continuing on staying at UNE and starting the accelerated nursing program up on the Portland campus there.
Well, good luck to you, and hope to have you back in Maine soon. That's Rebecca Kredeski, president of the University of New England's Class of 2020, a health, wellness, and occupational studies major who will graduate in a few weeks. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Roosevelt Campobello International Park, a legacy of friendship between two great nations. Looking forward to welcoming visitors soon. More at fdr.net. And Woodford F&B in Portland, now offering curbside pickup 7 days a week from 3 to 8 p.m. Menu at woodfordfb.com.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Maine resident Rachel Carson passed away on April 14, 1964. Some of her ashes were later scattered along the coast of Southport Island near Sheepscot Bay. She was a marine biologist, author, and conservationist whose books Silent Spring and other writings are credited with advancing the global environmental movement that, in part, led to the creation of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Carson was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Jimmy Carter.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine!
The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus now takes place at about 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and today with Governor Janet Mills will be happening at 2 o'clock and carried here on Maine Public Radio as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking today about how Maine's colleges and universities are coping with the coronavirus pandemic. My guest, Dan Malloy, Chancellor of the University of Maine System, and Lori LaChance, President of Thomas College. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Going to go to a Facebook question from Seth. I had a question regarding what is considered essential in terms of university research practices. Currently, it seems colleges and universities are considering curricular activities as essential, But many research programs are not and thus required to dramatically slow or cease operations. What about graduate students, many of whom don't have traditional classes but require research hours to complete theses and dissertations? In other words, their curricula is research. But what if most, if all labs need to shut down? And I'll turn to you, Chancellor Malloy.
Well, we are required to adhere to federal and state guidelines with respect to essential services. And it is absolutely having an impact in the research arena and on our students. We're working with our graduate students to make sure that we're doing the best we can to see them further their education and do it in a timely way. There are certain things that may be exempted under those guidelines, and there are most of the work is not exempted. So it is a difficult question and one which hopefully will only last for a short period of time. But I don't have an answer that's an easy one to come by or easy to deliver because it really has set back research tremendously in this country. I know that research universities, of which the University of Maine is one, and also a fair amount of research being done at our other institutions. But the University of Maine is the primary research institution in the state of Maine, and it is having an impact. But it will be short-lived, and we'll get back to doing the work that our faculty members and staff and graduate students do so exceedingly well.
On the line with us now, Jane Koslow. She is the Griffith Professor of Environmental Studies at Bates College. Professor Koslow, thanks for joining us.
Oh, sure. I'm delighted to.
I cannot believe you are teaching a course, coincidentally, called Catastrophe and Hope.
So this is a course that's basically provides a kind of a perspective from literature and history on how people live through disasters and how they get through them. So it's certainly more than relevant than, you know, for the situation that we're in right now.
Do you have a sense of what your students are feeling or experiencing? I understand part of their class is to blog about what they're going through.
That's right, yeah. So when we transitioned into online learning, I obviously had to make a lot of really quick changes, and because the class is so much about discussing these works and getting students' feedback on them and really engaging with them together, I decided that the best thing to do was to set up a blog for the class, and they've been quite remarkable in the frankness and the openness and the depth of their responses. You know, we were actually reading about Chernobyl, and then went on to read about Hurricane Katrina in the weeks since we've gone to distance learning. And I think the students have found it really helpful to learn from the experience of people who have contended with just overwhelming difficulty and catastrophic situations. But they also learn something about resilience and what gets people through. But they seem to have really enjoyed the blog and the chance to interact with each other in that way.
Before we let you go, since your class is called Catastrophe and Hope, would you like to give us all some words of hope?
Boy, that's the hardest part of the class. You know, I think I'm going to kind of echo my students and their perspectives. I mean, we live in Maine, and we're so lucky to have the communities of support that we have here and the amazing natural world around us. And it is, in the long run, it's communities that get people through extraordinarily difficult times, communities and families. So I think we all know that. We're just learning it in ways that we probably wish we didn't have to learn it.
Oh, Professor Koslow, thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations, I understand, on your retirement.
Like the senior you just talked to, I'm a senior too this year.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thanks for taking a few moments for us. Jane Koslow,
sure.
The Griffith Professor of Environmental Studies at Bates College, about to wrap up your 34th and last year at Bates. We have put a link on our website and Facebook page to an ongoing series Bates is doing documenting Professor Koslow's last year of teaching.
Thank you so much. We'll go to Gary calling from Portland. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I have a college advisor. I have a business called College Placement Services, and the questions I had have been addressed as far as potential for what scenarios could act out in the fall. So let me just ask a specific question of your panelists, and that is, how would you suggest a guidance counselor or a person like myself advise parents and students who are either already enrolled in colleges or about to make their deposits and make their choice for graduating seniors? What questions should they be asking various colleges that they're considering beginning at next fall or returning to?
Lori.
Well, it's a great question. I think this is a time where families will have to really think long and hard about the situation that they want their students to go into. Do they feel it's safe? It's a time to ask those questions. What are you doing to plan for this uncertain future? What will you do under this particular set of circumstances? What will you do under the other? How did the college treat its students when it had to transfer so quickly to remote learning? Were the students satisfied with that? Did the community hold true and support those students through the remainder of this year? And now's the time to really search and make sure that the entity that you're entrusting your most precious asset, your child, to, that you feel that they can answer those questions about how they will make sure your students will stay safe and engaged and gain everything they can from their college.
Chancellor Malloy.
Well, I think it's a great question coming from a professional, which is interesting. But really speaking to the concerns of students and parents, number one, I'd say education is the most important gift you can give your child. We know statistically that someone who gets a baccalaureate degree will, on average, live longer, be wealthier, raise children who are much more likely to receive an education as well, and be healthier and wealthier. But it shouldn't just be about that. It should be this pursuit of a broader mission. Where do I want to fit in the world when I'm done with my education? And where can that educational mission be met best at this moment? But there are other concerns. Do I want to go far away? Or do I want to stay close to home? I was just reviewing some research that was recently published saying that about 13% of students are deciding that they want to stay closer to their home than they might have imagined prior to the virus making its presence known. I'd also say look into things like debt. How much money is this going to cost me? What is the likely debt picture to be after 4 years or more spent in formal education? One other thing I want to say is the young people of today, and many of the students at our universities right now, are post 9/11 people. They're tough. They've learned a lot of lessons, and don't underestimate your child and their ability to adapt to this changing world that we are confronting. And by the way, an education will make them better lifelong adapters. And so it's important to begin that passage, I would say, and do not put it off. I fear that we'll lose too many people's appetite to get that four-year degree if we encourage too many people to sit it out for a period of time. Statistically, that does not work for us.
Gary, thanks for your question. I'm going to go to an email from Paul. I'm a professor at UMaine and wondering whether and when the system will decide about issuing a hiring freeze or not and about going online for fall semester or not. Other institutions from Harvard to Boston University to UMass are already taking or preparing to take such steps. We are interviewing finalists for a faculty position now and will be ready to make an offer next week. When I first started teaching online, the expectation was it takes a semester to prepare and included a $500 stipend if the course had not been offered online before. Planning courses online for the fall should start now. Now, before you answer, Chancellor Malloy, I just need to say we're coming tight on time. You've already answered the question that you are intending to have traditional class in the fall, but what about a hiring freeze? Is there a hiring freeze in going to happen at UMaine?
Yes, we put a hiring freeze in about 3 weeks ago, and in fact, I had a communication with a faculty. This particular faculty member may have missed it, announcing that. Now, when I say freeze, there are some positions that we simply will need to replace to complete to allow students to receive the education program that they're in. But there are other discretionary jobs potentially that will not be filled. So each president of each one of our universities has to make a submission asking for an exemption to that freeze. We have two vice provosts, one with an academic background. If it's an academic position, a chancellor has to sign off on it. And also another review with respect to the economics of that hiring decision has to be signed off on. That's how we'll move forward with filling certain positions. So when I say freeze, it's not rock solid or ice, but what it is a way to review and, quite frankly, hire fewer people. The worst thing we could do is to start hiring people and then have to lay them off at some point. I don't want to do that.
All right. You're going to go to a nice email from Susan. A huge shout out to the University of Maine system. I'm a graduate student at USM and have been so cheered by President Cummings' Monday missive, which is gentle, supportive, and uplifting. The professors have also reached out to find out how we are doing and the best way for us to proceed the rest of the semester. I'm impressed and grateful for the efforts of the teachers and administrators at USM. We have just about a minute left, Lori, but something I've seen all over social media from friends of mine in the academic community is that everybody just needs to be pretty gentle with each other right now.
Yeah, it's a great time to, if you're going to go through a crisis, to be in Maine. We are so blessed because the spirit of our people is practical, it's helpful, it's hardworking, and we have this can-do attitude. So we're blessed with the colleagues that we have to help us through this crisis. We're blessed with a congressional delegation and state government leaders who are just visionary, exceptional, helpful. They take your calls. They'll get down in the trenches and work through. And I think this crisis makes us such that we're in the best situation to come out the other side stronger, because our institutions are in a gorgeous state. It's clean, it's safe, it's rural in nature. And this dream of making Maine an education destination is one that could really be the silver lining in this cloud.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. That was Lori LaChance, president of Thomas College, and Danelle Malloy, chancellor of the University of Maine System, also with us for the hour. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Today's Maine Calling program will be rebroadcast at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from the CDC. Both Governor Janet Mills and CDC Director Nirav Shah are going to be at the news conference today, coming up in a few minutes here on Maine Public Radio. You can also watch it on Maine Public Television or the Maine Public website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.